Here's a look at our headlines this hour. Salman Rushdie, the British author of a blasphemous anti-Islam book, is stabbed at an event in the U.S. state of New York. Officials believe the suspect acted alone. Iran says an oil tanker operating on its flag is reloading oil confiscated by the United States in Greece. And the U.S. Justice Department says FBI agents took top secret files during a recent raid on former President Donald Trump's Florida residence. Thank you for joining us. Salman Rushdie, the author of an anti-Islam book, has been attacked on stage at an event in the U.S. state of New York. A man stabbed the blasphemous novelist in the neck and abdomen when he was about to give a lecture. Rushdie is now on a ventilator, and his agent says he has suffered damage to his liver and one eye. The suspected attacker has been detained. Police, however, say they have no indication of a motive.
We don't have any indication of a motive at this time, but we are working with the FBI, the sheriff's office, and we will determine what the cause of this was or what the motive for this attack was.
Police have identified the attacker as 24-year-old Hadi Matar from New Jersey. They are assuming he acted alone. Rushdie published his blasphemous novel, The Satanic Verses, in the late 80s. The novel triggered an outcry across the Muslim world. Earlier, we reached out to political commentator Sayyid Mohsen Abbas to get his thoughts on the attack on Salman Rushdie. Here's more.
Well, Salman had really gone into obscurity, really, relatively speaking, from the time when he first was at the center of arguably the launch of what we regard, often many of us within the deeper commentary circles, regard as the war on Islam or the war on the Muslim world by neoliberal secular establishment on a formal basis. It was obviously a time of then when, of course, a narrative had to be formed, a narrative that was anti-Iran, anti-Islamic revolution, anti-Ayatollah Khomeini. But the fact is that it got blown out of all proportion, largely because the Western media and the neoliberal agenda it was very much after that kind of vilification of Muslims, of Islam, of Ayatollah Khomeini, and also of really highlighting in a way in their own public's minds a kind of fear of the Islamic Republic of Iran and the revolution that had taken place there. So aside from that broader, deeper state agenda, for which I think that Salman Rushdie very likely was also used, whether it was knowingly or unknowingly, on an individual level, he'd kind of outlived his usefulness.
An Iranian flak tanker seized by Greece in April is now reloading its oil shipment for return to Iran. Iran's embassy in Athens broke the news, adding that Lana tanker will soon depart for the country. The development comes after the Greek Supreme Court canceled an earlier order for seizure of the consignment. The ship was earlier detained by Greek authorities, and its oil cargo was confiscated by the United States in late June, or I should say in late July. It triggered tensions with Tehran, which called Athens' move an act of robbery. Iran has also detained two Greek tankers for violations in the Persian Gulf waters. The Iranian president says his administration won't tie the country's problems and progress to sanctions or their removal. Ebrahim Raisi says the progress and economy of the country will not be kept back on account of other people's smiles and scowls. He vowed that growth and development would continue forcefully despite enemy threats and sanctions. The Iranian president stressed that the Islamic Republic has never abandoned the negotiation table. He was referring to diplomatic efforts to revive the 2015 nuclear deal, known as the JCPOA. The agreement was left hanging by a threat after the unilateral U.S. withdrawal from it in 2018 and the reimposition of sanctions on Iran. Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlut Çavuşoğlu has revealed that back in October last year, he had held talks with his Syrian counterpart Faisal Miqdad. During the talks, the top Turkish diplomat has said that the Syrian crisis will be resolved if Damascus holds talks with opposition groups. Rahşan Saklam reports from Istanbul.
Turkey's Foreign Minister Mevlut Çavuşoğlu says he had a side talk with Syrian Foreign Minister Faisal Miqdad on the sidelines of the Non-Aligned Movement Summit in October last year. The Turkish minister added he suggested a reconciliation to take place between the Syrian government and the opposition, noting that without such a step, Syria will continue to face a crisis. Cavusoglu said that the EU and the international community would support a ceasefire in the war-torn country, and that no country would help in Syria's rebuild the process if a ceasefire is not achieved.
To prevent the division of Syria, there must be a strong administration in Syria. The will that can dominate every corner of its lands can only be achieved through unity and solidarity. We need to bring the opposition and government together for reconciliation. There will be no permanent peace otherwise.
Some believe such a revelation is a signal indicating Turkey is preparing for its cross-border military operation in northern Syria. In recent weeks, the Turkish army has been sending reinforcements to northern Syria, near the town of Tel Rifat. The town is under the control of Kurdish YPG forces, a U.S.-backed militia that Turkey considers the armed wing of the Kurdistan Workers' Party, known as PKK.
I think the timing of this announcement comes as Turkey's preparing for a cross-border military operation to secure the border area and push back Kurdish forces. A reconciliation between the government and the opposition will not only bring peace to Syria, but also Turkey, a country that has been directly affected by the Syrian war from terrorist attacks to the refugee crisis.
Some analysts believe Turkey has long been serving its own agenda in Syria. For example, by supporting some opposition groups inside Syria who served Ankara's interest in securing its borders and pushing Kurdish forces back. It might be soon to say whether Ankara has changed its strategy in regards with Syria. What is clear for Turkey is that fighting or defeating the Kurdish militants cannot guarantee its security. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Opponents of the Iraqi cleric Muqtada Assad hold a rally in the capital Baghdad amid a deadlock over the formation of a new government. The so-called coordination framework said it would hold an indefinite sit-in to speed up the formation of the new government. The coalition urged all parties to put aside personal interests and adhere to the country's constitution. The protests come 2 weeks after supporters of Saad stormed the parliament and began an open-ended protest there. They have been demanding fresh elections after the coordination framework named a candidate for the premiership. Saad won the most seats in the 2021 parliamentary elections, but last June, he asked the bloc's MPs to resign after failing to form a government. FBI agents have found top-secret documents during a raid on the residence of former U.S. President Donald Trump. The Justice Department says 11 sets of classified documents, including top-secret files, were removed from Trump's Florida home. The department also says the former president is believed to have violated a federal law that bans possession of national defense information. Media reports say these are secret files on U.S. nuclear weapons. Trump, however, rejects this. He has called the search political retribution, claiming he had no stored classified information. The FBI has yet to make any comment amid criticism of the move by leading Republicans. This is the first time that the property of a former president has been searched as part of a criminal probe. The EU foreign policy chief has admitted that the bloc applies double standards when it comes to the wars in Ukraine and Palestine.
We are often criticized for double standards, but international politics is to a large degree about applying double standards. We do not use the same criteria for all problems.
Borrell made the remarks in an interview with a Spanish daily. He was speaking on why Brussels is more willing to help Ukrainians than the people of Gaza. He also said it is the West's code moral imperative to support Kiev against Moscow. Borrell shirked responsibility for resolving the situation in the besieged Gaza Strip, adding that it is out of the EU's hands. Meanwhile, the top official blamed the U.S. for the tensions in occupied Palestinian territories. The U.S. has been a staunch supporter of the Israeli regime. Pro-Palestine activists took to the streets of Austria's capital, Vienna, amid international fury over Israel's murderous bombing of Gaza, which saw scores of innocent civilians killed. Our correspondent Robert Carter has traveled to Vienna and witnessed local action as demands for justice continue to grow.
Hundreds of pro-Palestine activists marched through central Vienna on Friday to vent their anger following Israel's recent bombardment of Gaza. They joined thousands of other protesters worldwide who were shocked into action after the three-day Israeli offensive left over 350 Palestinians wounded, 46 dead, including 16 children, according to Palestinian officials.
Following the recent violence against Gaza, shocking images of children suffering and dying went absolutely viral on social media. Yet despite these disturbing images doing the rounds, they haven't been routinely featured in Western mainstream media circles. In fact, it's incredibly rare for any images of Palestinian suffering to be published at all.
They are suffering every day, every single day. People got arrested, children got arrested, people got murdered. Gaza, what we saw last week in three, 4 days, got bombed. They have no electricity. They have no way to go anywhere. They are blocked from the Israeli occupation.
I need to tell my people that we are standing up for them. We are resisting from abroad. So you have to stay strong. And I'm an artist, so it is a duty for me to raise the voice for the ones who are not heard.
We need to raise our voice, and Austria cooperates with Israel. And that's what we are doing here also is that we want to make people aware of this, that Austria is cooperating with Israel.
Despite regular condemnation of Israeli aggression by human rights groups, Palestinians continue to suffer while the Western world looks on, leaving few options left for Palestinians driven to fight for their very survival. Robert Carter, Vienna.
Household energy bills in Italy are expected to double in the third quarter of 2022 as a consequence of the sanctions on Russia and rising gas prices. Italian families are holding their breath as fears about how they will be able to cover their costs keep mounting. Max Civili reports from Rome.
Gas bills in Italy will likely double in cost from October the 1st if gas prices continue to rise this way. The recent announcement by power regulator ARERA has gone utterly unnoticed, with the Italian media focusing on the electoral campaign about a month away from the September 25 national elections. A week ago, the outgoing Italian government unveiled a 17 billion euros aid package aimed at protecting families from surging energy costs and rising consumer prices. However, ARERA and some energy experts have warned that very little has been done so far to reduce energy consumption in the country.
Italy's highly critical energy situation has been downplayed by politicians and the media. On one side, there is confidence about the country achieving its target of reaching storage levels of 90%, while on the other side, the risk that Russia could altogether stop the flow of gas to Italy has been underplayed.
Gas is central to Italy's energy systems. The country even produces over 50% of its electricity from natural gas. Rome has cut its reliance on Russian gas imports to 25% from about 40% at the start of the year, a decision that has thrown the energy sector into uncertainty. Some analysts have predicted annual gas bills could reach an average of 1,800 euros next year, almost double the annual average of 950 euros recorded this year. Many Italians are simply bewildered about how they can find themselves in a position of not being able to heat or light their homes.
It's been this way forever. I used to be a unionist. I saw the crisis coming. This is how our country works. We don't have any sovereignty.
Nothing works in this country. We have forever been in the hands of a bunch of swindlers and criminals. Italy has no future.
The outgoing government is planning to offset its dependence on Russian gas by signing new deals with African and Eastern Mediterranean countries and building new regasification plants in a number of Italian sea towns, a move that has met with staunch opposition from local residents. Max Civili, Rome.
Beijing says it will not allow any separatist activities in Taiwan, accusing the Taiwanese president and her ruling party of plotting to split China.
Tsai Ing-wen and the Democratic Progressive Party authorities reverse black and white to confuse the public, which once again bears the true nature of plotting to split the country. It's the common will of all Chinese people to realize complete reunification of the motherland, and this is the unstoppable general trend of history. We are ready to create broad space for peaceful reunification, but would never leave any room for separatist activities in any form seeking to secede Taiwan from China.
The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman said separatist attempts are doomed to fail. Wen Bin warned authorities in Taipei against what he called collusion with external forces to seek secession. He said such, quote, provocations will have catastrophic consequences for Taiwan. Tensions have been running high between the two sides since the U.S. House Speaker's visit to Taipei earlier this month. China held its largest ever military drills around the island following the controversial visit. Taiwan also carried out two-day maneuvers in a show of strength. China recently proposed a one-country, two-systems model in order to defuse tensions, but it was rejected by Taipei.
Tensions are still high between China and Taiwan. The flare-up comes days after the provocative visit by U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to the island. Officials in Chinese Taipei have rejected the one-country, two-systems plan proposed by China for the self-ruled island. Taipei says that only the Taiwanese can decide the island's future. The reaction came after China published a white paper on Taiwan, which Beijing says shows the resolute determination of Beijing to peacefully resolve the unification issue. The paper lays out China's position on the self-ruled island. It says Beijing would never allow any attempt to separate Taiwan, but also would make every effort to achieve unification through peaceful means. Taiwan has accused Beijing of using House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit as, quote, an excuse to destroy the status quo. Pelosi visited the island on August 2nd despite vehement protests from China.
What they want to do with Taiwan is fight, U.S. wants to fight China to the last Taiwanese. If not to the last Japanese, if not enough, then to the last Korean. Ultimately, the U.S. will not fight the wars. It will finance them, it will give weapons, it will antagonize us, it will antagonize both sides, and that's what they want to do, and it's actually a replica to the World War II.
Beijing reacted with an unprecedented burst of military around the island. The drills lasted for several days. Taiwan has also launched live fire drills in the wake of China's largest ever military exercises. The white paper issued by China this week was the third document of its kind over Taiwan. The previous editions were the Taiwan Question and Reunification of China, which was published in 1993, and the One China Principle and the Taiwan Question, which came out in 2000. China insists differences in the social systems in mainland and Taiwan are, quote, neither an obstacle to reunification nor a justification for secessionism. But Beijing says it will not rule out the military option to achieve such reunification.
What China wants to do with this white paper is just to find a way with Taiwan to get it back to its sense, because reunification will happen. The problem is that if it doesn't happen peacefully, it will happen by force. China doesn't want to do it by force, but it's being pushed on the corner by the U.S. because the U.S. is actually slowly declaring Taiwan independent.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In the U.S., Representative Liz Cheney has admitted she would rather work with her Democratic colleagues in the House.
than some of the far-right conservatives in her own party, who have remained staunch allies of former President Donald Trump. In an interview with the New York Times, Liz Cheney said she would much rather serve with Mickey Schero and Chrissy Houlihan and Alyssa Slotkin than Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert. Even though, on substance certainly, I have big disagreements with the Democratic women I just mentioned. The article you're about to hear has been written by Newsweek journalist Catherine Fung. The article has been published by Newsweek and is titled, Liz Cheney Would Rather Work With Democrats Than Marjorie Taylor Greene. In the U.S., Representative Liz Cheney has admitted she would rather work with her Democratic colleagues in the House than some of the far-right conservatives in her own party, who have remained staunch allies of former President Donald Trump. In an interview with the New York Times, Liz Cheney said she would much rather serve with Mickey Schero and Chrissy Houlihan and Alyssa Slotkin than Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert, even though on substance, certainly, I have big disagreements with the Democratic women that I just mentioned. But they love this country, they do their homework, and they are people that are trying to do the right thing for the country, Liz Cheney said of Schero, Houlihan and Slotkin, who are all Democrats. The Congresswoman also extended her skepticism of top Republicans to Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who she said she would find it very difficult to support in 2024 because DeSantis has lined himself up almost entirely with Donald Trump, and I think that's very dangerous, she said. Liz Cheney, who was ousted from GOP House leadership for her vocal criticisms of Donald Trump, said she had no plans to change her party affiliation, saying that she's still a Republican, but she added that she believes the GOP is continuing to drive itself in a ditch, and I think it's going to take several cycles if it can be healed. The Congresswoman is up against a tough re-election this year. Donald Trump has sought revenge for Liz Cheney's vote to impeach him and her membership in the January 6th committee by endorsing her primary challenger, Harriet Hageman. While Cheney is still hopeful that the people of Wyoming could turn out in support for her, or at least recognize the Republican royalty behind her family name, she told the New York Times that she would be okay with being voted out of office over a focus on the January 6th Capitol riot. If the cost of standing up for the Constitution is losing the House seat, then that's the price I'm willing to pay, the Congresswoman said. Despite the backlash the Wyoming Republican has received over the last year and a half since she broke with her party, Liz Cheney said, there have been so many moments where elected Republican officials have privately praised her for her bravery. Her spokesperson said that while some Senate Republicans, like Senator John Cornyn, have said they continue to respect her, obviously nothing the senators have done has effectively addressed this threat. What the country needs are serious people who are willing to engage in debates about policy, Liz Cheney said. Meanwhile, a growing number of Democrats in Wyoming may be registering as Republicans in order to back Representative Liz Cheney in the state's upcoming primary race, according to new data. Liz Cheney, the state's sole representative in the House of Representatives, has begun urging Democrats to switch their political allegiances to vote for her in the August 16 primary as she faces a tough re-election battle. With opinion polls showing her trailing behind the challenger Harriet Hageman, who has been endorsed by Donald Trump. Wyoming Democrats, who are massively outnumbered in the state by Republicans, have received mail from Liz Cheney's campaign with instructions on how to change their party affiliation. Her campaign website also links to a form that allows people to switch political parties. The tactic may be working, according to data from the Wyoming Secretary of State's office. Between January and August of this year, the number of registered Democrats in Wyoming dropped by 6,069, while the number of registered Republicans in Wyoming increased by 11,495, according to the data. The number of unaffiliated voters in Wyoming dropped by 1,575 over the same period.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone. Let us contemplate a wise aphorism from Imam Zainul Abidin, peace be upon him, the Holy Prophet's fourth infallible heir. Beware of associating with the disobedient to God, supporting the oppressors and keeping the company of sinners. Beware of the seditious affairs of such people and be away from their spheres.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z, an introduction into Husseini lifestyle. Today's lesson, firm determination of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone. You are listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host Hussein Hinzano, and today we're going to talk about the firm determination of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam. Now, the incomparable qualities that were present in the personality of the leader of the nobleman and the elements and basic matters were present in the being of His Eminence Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam in an incalculable quantity, and it's as follows. When we talk about the firm determination of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam, we're talking about his personal qualities. Of the personal qualities of the father of the martyr is a firm determination and a strong will that this valuable condition he had inherited from his respected grandfather, a prophet who had changed the course of history and had transformed the meanings of life. And alone, he stood against the great powers who stood in his way of spreading the word of God. And he did not care for them and told his uncle, Abu Talib, who was the believer of Quraysh, "By Allah, if the sun is blessed in my right hand and the moon is blessed in the left hand or in my left hand, and I am asked to refrain from this prophethood of Islam, I shall not do so till I die, or that the Almighty Allah may make them successful." By this powerful determination, he confronted the powers of polytheism. This is the same determination that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam gained. This is the same determination that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam studied from his grandfather.
Why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
As-salamu alayk, ya Aba Abdullah.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. We were talking about the firm determination of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam, saying that Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam had a firm determination and he inherited this type of determination from his grandfather, Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. Now, by this powerful determination, Al-Imam Al-Hussein confronted the powers of polytheism as his grandfather did. His grandfather was able to dominate the direction of the events, and he, of course, confronted the powers of polytheism during his time of leadership. In the same way, the eminent grandson of His Eminence, the grandson of the Prophet, Al-Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, arose against the Umayyad kingdom and without any doubt, and announced his denial to pay oath of allegiance to Yazid, who was a very bad tyrant at the time. And in spite of the scarcity of his helpers, he left for the battlefield of the Holy War, so that he may bestow loftiness to the word of truth and destroy falsehood. Well, the large number of Umayyad fighters mobilized to confront him. So, however, His Eminence Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam did not worry about the Umayyad fighters or whatever it was, but he continued and he announced his intention and aim in his immortal words by saying, "I don't see death as a success and life with the oppressors as nothing but a deviation." All this Imam Hussein is saying that he's never going to stand against the Umayyad rulers, the Umayyad fighters. He's going to stand against the bad tyrants of the time, Yazid, and he's not going to pay allegiance to them. This type of determination, this type of firm determination, is among the very important characteristics that we find in the personality of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam. Till next episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
But anyone stay here won't be alive tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. At deep silence, feel the air.
Cultural news. Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With the light.
Happy news for zoo goers in Nicaragua. Two adorable baby tapirs are born at a country's national zoo south of Managua, adding attractions to the visitors. Two endangered tapirs, a male and a female, were born hours apart at the weekend. In a video shared by the zoo, one of the newborns is seen suckling and walking near her mother. The director of the zoo says the babies are yet to be named but are in perfect health. Tapirs inhabit jungle and forest regions of South and Central America, with one species inhabiting Southeast Asia. They look something like pigs with trunks, but they are actually related to horses and rhinos. Nicaragua launched a project that seeks to conserve this animal in danger of extinction due to hunting and the destruction of natural habitat. Now we'll take you to mine-riddled French island, Chazoms, which is emerging from the ruins and gradually turning into workers' paradise. Chazoms, close to the port city of Saint-Malo, has an amazing landscape but remains uninhabited as it saw a devastating bombardment by the Allies during the World War II. The Nazi-occupied island was victim of the most bombings per square meter. Known as Martyred and Forbidden Island, it was opened only in 2018 after extensive demining efforts allowed the opening of a marked path. Now, every year, thousands of day trippers make the short boat journey, marveling at the spectacular maritime views and flourishing wildlife there. The safe area still makes up just 3% of the island, but it lets visitors wander between rusty cannons and bunkers. Some workers say they hope the trail will be lengthened to allow a complete tour of the island.
Africa is taking back some of its greatest treasures stolen by the British back in the 19th century. The Horniman Museum in London has agreed to return the artifacts to Nigeria. These are 72 relics, which include 12 highly treasured brass plaques known as the Benin Bronzes. The bronzes are a group of several thousand metal plaques and sculptures that decorated the royal palace of the once mighty kingdom of Benin since the 16th century. These artifacts were looted from a region in modern-day Nigeria in a British military incursion. They later ended up in museums in Europe and the U.S. African countries have been fighting to recover works pillaged by explorers and colonizers as Western institutions grapple with the cultural legacy of colonialism. The Jamtal Glacier in Austria has been losing around 1 meter of its surface annually. Scientists say the ice is a precious archive that is simply melting away and are surveying the area. Austrian mountain researchers say the glaciers contain an invaluable trove of ancient frozen leaves and twigs and other scientific treasures that can be lost forever. They say the time capsules, including the remote Jamtal Valley, are falling victim to climate change. In the 1990s, tourists found that 5,300-year-old mummy of Iceman near the same area. According to the international data, global warming has raised temperatures in Europe's highest mountains by nearly 2 degrees Celsius in the past 120 years. French rescuers are racing against time to save a beluga whale stranded in Seine River near Paris. The beluga was first spotted stuck between two locks in the river from Paris to the English Channel on Tuesday. Specialists say the animal is undernourished and is refusing food. Warm water is also worsening the health of this creature, which is normally seen near Norway, some 3,000 kilometers to the north. Rescuers say they have only up to 48 hours to save the whale. They are now looking at the possibility of taking the beluga out of the water, treating it, and eventually transferring it out to the sea.
There are many big restaurants with Michelin stars awarded based on their quality. But you will be amazed to know that an eatery located in a tiny village in Greenland also has this badge of honor, making it the world's most remote Michelin-starred restaurant. This eatery in the village, which is home to only 53 people, serves you what it gets from its immediate surroundings. Looking out over the chilly North Atlantic, customers taste a variety of local products, ranging from whale skin to an Arctic bird whose entire wing, including feathers, is on the plate. The restaurant is so remote that you can only reach there by boat through floating icebergs. The head chef says he forages for wild berries, flowers, and herbs every day, since the menu largely includes local flavors.
Visitors and staff at a French zoo have celebrated the first birthday of twin pandas. The young bears were given a tasty treat of frozen cakes and other treats. As part of the event, five lucky visitors were also given the chance to participate in the celebrations behind the scenes with golden tickets. Other festivities included face painting and panda-themed activities. The baby pandas were born last August and now weigh 23 and 28 kilograms. They live with their mother at Zoo Parc de Bouval, where they have been on display since their arrival in 2021.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Many people develop deeper relationship with four-legged animals, treating them like their own kids. A Kenyan conservationist is one of them. 33-year-old Salome Lemessier has been a community ranger in Sierra Conservancy, northern Kenya, since 2015. The mother of four is stationed at a rhino sanctuary and is in charge of protecting a male rhino named Loijipo. At just a few days old, Loijipo was abandoned by his mother, possibly due to her being spooked by something. After being cared for, he was returned to the sanctuary under surveillance in an attempt to rewild him. 3 years on from his release into Sierra Wilderness, he is taking his time to carve out his territory, of course, with the help of Salome. The chess fever in the southern Indian city of Chennai is on a peak as the 44th International Chess Olympiad kicks off there. Students created a mammoth chess board on the playground and dressed up as 32 chess pieces to promote the game. For 2 weeks, Chennai is hosting nearly 2,000 players from 188 countries. For the first time in nearly 100 years of history, the Chess Olympiad, India is playing host. The event will run until August the 10th. Ahead of the game, 150 underprivileged children from various government schools were given the opportunity to fly. These were the students who won in a district-level chess tournament. Excited spectators gather at the Solberg Airport in the U.S. for the 39th New Jersey Lottery Festival of Ballooning.
We have about 45 balloons here today, including these spectacular special shapes. Our signature New Jersey Lottery Sunny Days balloon. You can see the tiger. Unicorn is hiding behind there. Tasmanian Devil, unique photo panda. We are having a spaceship. There's Billy the Kid. Spectacular presentation. You won't believe your skies this weekend.
Dozens of hot air balloons were test-inflated in preparation for the real deal. The festival is considered the largest summertime event in New Jersey. Reddington City officials have predicted about 170,000 people will join the festival over the weekend. Weather forecasts say the sky are gentle enough for over 100 balloons to take flight in the morning and evening in mass ascents. And no one is more excited than the festival producer, who has been planning the event for months.
Including these spectacular special shapes, the balloons bring out the kid in everyone. You know, I've done this for a long time. This is the 39th annual one. But still, when I hear that propane whirring and these balloons going up, it makes the hair on my arm stand up.
The producer says these balloons will be handled by professional pilots and other balloons will be available for rides. The festival will last for 3 days, ending with food vendors, games, amusement rides, and other entertainment. There will also be a massive fireworks display as well as a nighttime feature of glowing balloons. The annual festival is the largest seasonal hot air balloon festival in North America. It draws in thousands of visitors every year.
You might think twice about throwing out your old trainers after this story. A startup in Tunisia breathes new life into old shoes as artists restore and even customize the footwear. The new business is called Kenenti and is located in the capital, Tunis. Here, the team uses fabrics, laces and leather recovered from various factories for the repair work. The creative artists work on every detail during each project, even the soles of the shoes. The work aims to find solutions to shoe waste and reuse items instead of adding them to the world's landfills. Cherif Zeroui is the co-founder of Kenenti. He says the idea came to him 2 years ago when he discovered the number of shoes thrown away each year in Tunisia.
In France, there were 100 million pairs of shoes thrown away every year. This is a huge figure for us, and for the ecosystem and for the earth. In Tunisia, it's almost the same given the population. There were 3 or 4 million shoes thrown away every year. So we thought of giving added value to these shoes, so we restored them.
Zerbui also says he is happy to create jobs for those willing to participate regardless of the educational degree. Besides shoes, these artists dabble in restoring worn-out handbags, giving them a brand new look. Many of the artists and interns say they are proud to be part of this unique project. They say they feel like a family there. The startup is the first trainer restoration business to be launched in North America.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump's legal team is in direct communication with Justice Department officials. The first sign of talks between the two sides as the criminal probe into January 6, 2021 accelerates, sources familiar with the matter have told CNN. The talks revolve around whether Donald Trump would be able to shield conversations he had while he was president from federal investigators. The article you're about to hear has been written by CNN journalists Caitlin Pollance, Kara Scannell, Gabby Orr, and Kirsten Holmes. The article has been published by CNN and is titled Trump Lawyers in Talks with Justice Department about January 6 Criminal Probe. Former President Donald Trump's legal team is in direct communication with Justice Department officials. The first sign of talks between the two sides as the criminal probe into January 6, 2021 accelerates, sources familiar with the matter have told CNN. The talks revolve around whether Donald Trump would be able to shield conversations he had while he was president from federal investigators. In recent weeks, investigators have moved aggressively into Trump's orbit, subpoenaing top former White House officials, focusing on efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election and executing searches of lawyers who sought to aid those efforts. The Trump team's discussions are with the U.S. Attorney's Office in Washington, D.C., which is in charge of the investigation, and its top January 6 prosecutor, Thomas Windham, the sources said. The conversations have not been previously reported. At this stage, the conversations are focused mostly on whether any communications that witnesses from the Trump West Wing had with the former president can be kept from a federal criminal grand jury under Trump's claims of executive privilege, the people said. The Justice Department has been anticipating a court fight with Donald Trump over executive privilege. The issue has arisen as grand jury subpoenas have been issued to two former White House counsels, office officials, and to former Vice President Mike Pence's chief counsel and chief of staff. Donald Trump's legal defense team has warned him that indictments are possible, sources have told CNN. Some members of Donald Trump's legal team have discussed his potential defense strategies on at least two occasions in recent months, according to two sources familiar with the matter, as they brace for new developments in the Justice Department probe and a separate investigation by Georgia officials into his potentially criminal meddling in the state's 2020 election results. Rolling Stone previously reported that Donald Trump has been briefed. Trump has grilled his attorneys on whether they actually believe he will face formal charges, according to sources. Yet the former president has expressed a heavy dose of skepticism that he will be indicted, one of the sources familiar with the matter has said. Another source close to the former president told CNN that Donald Trump also has posed questions about a potential indictment to members of his inner circle, some of whom believe the president is concerned about the possibility of federal charges. But one person close to Donald Trump said he is noticeably more engaged when he's chatting with friends and advisors about the 2022 midterm elections and his possible presidential campaign in 2024 that he has been during briefings on legal strategy. This person described the former president as dismissive in conversations about his legal troubles, often repeating his witch hunt mantra as he claims the various probes he's facing are plainly driven by political opponents. A Trump spokesperson said in a statement to CNN, "There is clearly a concerted effort to undermine the vital, constitutionally rooted executive and attorney-client privileges through partisan political persecution. How can any future president ever have private conversations with his attorneys, with his counselors and other senior advisers if any such advisor is forced, either during or after the presidency, in front of an unselect committee or other entity, and be forced to reveal those privileged, confidential discussions?" The spokesman said, "President Trump will not be deterred by witch hunts or kangaroo courts from continuing to defend and fight for America, our Constitution, and the truth." The U.S. Justice Department has so far declined to comment. In recent months, the former president has ignored advice from some of his advisers to avoid speaking with former and current aides who have become entangled in the House Select Committee's probe into January 6 and may become part of the criminal investigation, people familiar with the matter have told CNN. Donald Trump has specifically been counseled to cut contact with his former White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, whose actions leading up to and on the day of the U.S. Capitol insurrection have been deeply scrutinized by the House panel, the people said. Two of Mark Meadows' former top aides, Cassidy Hutchinson and Alyssa Farrick Griffin, also have been highly critical of Donald Trump, with Cassidy Hutchinson testifying about damaging details about Trump's actions on 6th of January 2021. During her public testimony before the House panel in June. Hutchinson is cooperating in the Department of Justice probe as well. Some of Donald Trump's attorneys believe that Mark Meadows could also be in investigators' crosshairs and are concerned he could become a fact witness if he's pushed to cooperate in the Justice Department probe, according to two people familiar with the matter. In response, Meadows' attorney, George Terwilliger, told CNN on Thursday, "All of that is idle and uninformed speculation, apparently by people that know little but talk a lot." Former White House attorney Ty Cobb said, "Mark Meadows is perfectly positioned to be the John Dean of this mess," referring to the former Richard Nixon aide who offered crucial public testimony during the Watergate hearings. "The reason Mark Meadows is valuable is also the reason he is in jeopardy. He was basically at Trump's right hand throughout all these exercises and participated in key meetings and phone calls," Ty Cobb said. Yet, according to a source familiar with the relationship, Donald Trump and Mark Meadows have spoken a number of times. Another source close to Trump described their relationship as not the same as it once was while they served in the White House, but insisted they still maintained the relationship, even as Trump has complained about Meadows in his recent conversations with other allies. Mark Meadows has been known to attend fundraisers and events at the former president's Mar-a-Lago estate in Palm Beach, Florida, where he also helped organize a donor retreat last April for the Conservative Partnership Institute, a group he runs with former Republican Senator Jim DeMint. The securing of Trump's endorsement for U.S. Senate candidate Ted Budd was the last time that Mark Meadows was really around regularly. Since then, he's never been a big part of the political operation or Donald Trump's thought process, said a second person close to Donald Trump.
Midstream. Imam Hussein is the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon them. Born in 620 Anno Domini to a family famed for their values of love, honor, and peace. His martyrdom anniversary, known as Ashura, is considered a defining event in the ideological and resistance movements of Shia Muslims against corruption and oppression.